الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر
In the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful, the Creator and the Sustainer of the Universe, peace and blessings upon His servant Muhammad forever. Amin. I bear witness that there is no God worthy of worship except the one true God, and I bear witness that Muhammad is the messenger and slave servant of God. I greet you, our viewers of the Islam in Focus program, with our usual greeting, a greeting that has been used by all of the prophets from Abraham through to Prophet Muhammad. Peace and blessings be upon them all. Assalamu alaikum, which means peace be unto you. Today we have our 29th program in our series dealing with the moral teachings of Islam. We'll be looking at the question of responsibility or etiquette of speech. I'm your host, Hamad Rashid, and I have joining me as usual on the program Dr. Jamal Badawi of St. Mary's University. Brother Jamal, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
I wonder if we could start today's program with an examination of what the Quran has to say about the use or the abuse of the faculty of speech.
Well, to start with, as a basic rule, the ability to speak up in terms of human communication is regarded in the Quran as one of the greatest bounties or blessings of God. Indeed, in chapter 55, it talks about God, how He created man or mankind, generic term, and taught him the power of expression or the power of speech or intelligent speech and understanding. So in itself, it's a great bounty of God that makes human distinct from other levels of creatures. The main problem, however, is whether this power of speech or expression is used effectively and whether it is also abused by the individual. In the Quran we find that the individual responsibility has been very much emphasized, and part of that responsibility also is the responsibility for the kind of words we utter, whether it's goodly words, useful, meaningful or not. The Quran makes a contrast, for example, in chapter 14, in verse 24, on God gives a parable there, or a similitude of the kind of words that come from people's tongues. It says that, didn't you see how God has made a parable of the goodly word like a tree, whose roots are firmly established in the ground, and whose roots or whose branches expand and reach for heavens. The opposite is presented also. And he said the parable or similitude of an evil word is like an evil tree which is torn up by the roots from the surface of the earth, that it doesn't have any foundation. See the contrast between the type of words that may be said. So the main problem, it appears, is not in the power of speech itself, or ability to produce words or communicate messages, but rather as to whether the person properly used that faculty given by God in accordance with his responsibility or abuse it.
Now, are there any specific measures that are prescribed by Islam in order to prevent an individual from using speech in an abusive kind of way?
There are a number of steps or recommendations that one can derive from reading the Quran. To start with, we find there is always a recommendation that a person should avoid vain talk, idle talk that is not beneficial and doesn't have a good reason. In other words, it doesn't say don't talk, but it says when there is no need and there is no good reason for a person to speak up, it's better actually not to say anything. For example, the Quran describing the believers say, وَالَّذِينَ هُمْ عَنِ اللَّغْوِ مُعْرِضُونَ. That's in chapter 23. That's one of the characteristics of true believers, is that they are the ones who avoid vain talk. وَإِذَا مَرُّوا بِاللَّغْوِ مَرُّوا كِرَامًا. In chapter 25, that if they pass by futility or vain talk, they pass by with honorable avoidance. Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, emphasized the same principle also in one of his sayings, as narrated in both Bukhari and Muslim collection. He says that he who believes in God and in the hereafter should say either a good thing or keep quiet. In other words, if there is something goodly to be said, yes; if not, a person need not speak. But of course, when we talk about speaking, like I indicated earlier, it doesn't mean any restriction, so long as there is a good purpose behind it. Indeed, the Quran in various verses indicate the kind of words that one really should say. For example, in the second chapter of the Quran, in verse 83, it says, speak fair to the people. So once you get this adjective to speech, you add this quality of fairness, then this would be welcome type of thing that should be said. In chapter 33 in the Quran, it says, وَقُولُوا قَوْلًا سَدِيدًا, and say words which are intended towards truth and right. In one beautiful saying of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, as narrated in collection by Ahmad, he says that no belief or the faith of a believer will not be right until his heart is right, and no heart will be right until his words are also, his or her words are right. So the reflection of faith is purity of the heart. Reflection of purity of the heart is also reflected or shown in the kind of words uttered by the individual. In another saying, he said, الكلمه الطيبه صدقه, a goodly word is like a charity. If you don't have enough to pay charity, at least a goodly word is regarded as equivalent to charity. Thirdly, another aspect that one can also see quite clearly in the Quran, that one has to be particularly careful about uttering words which may put him in trouble in this life and or in the hereafter. An example of this would be the case where a person speaks something improper to another person, and as such aroused enmity and conflict. Beautifully, this was expressed in chapter 17 in the Quran. قُلْ لِعِبَادِي يَقُولُ الَّتِي هِيَ أَحْسَنُ إِنَّ الشَّيْطَانَ يَنْزَغْ بَيْنَهُمْ, that say, O Muhammad, to my servants, that they should say what is best and what is decent, because Satan tried to arouse enmity and hatred between them. So once a person makes the wrong word, the Satan keeps whispering to both sides, and that keeps escalating the kind of conflict. We find also the same thing emphasized in the saying of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, in one of the sayings narrated by Al-Bayhaqi. He says that the slip of the tongue, this is more or less a free translation, the slip of the tongue is worse than the slip of the foot. In other words, you could slip physically, but you can stand up, but a slip of the tongue could have serious consequences in this life and in the hereafter. These are some of the basic recommendations made in the Quran to fulfill this responsibility of proper use of speech.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this responsibility of a Muslim to speak decently limited only to conversations with other Muslims, or is it more universal than that? Does it apply to speech with non-Muslims as well?
No, you said it right. It is more universal than that. In fact, so long as there is no particular reason for aggression or hostility, there is no aggression or hostility shown by people who do not necessarily believe in Islam themselves, they should be accorded the same kind of courtesy. I'll give you the documentation from the Quran itself. For example, you find in chapter 29 in the Quran, verse 46, it says, argue not or discuss not with the people of the book, particularly like Jews and Christians, except in the best and most decent manner, except for those who inflict injury. And notice this, And it says, and say, let's say to them, we believe in what has been revealed to us, that's the Quran, and what has come down to you, and our God and your God is one, and unto whom we all bow and surrender. So the basic rule is exactly the same kind of treatment, so long as there is no reason, there is no aggression or hostility demonstrated. It's the same kind of treatment.
Well, now, what about the situation where there are people who adopt a hostile attitude? What does Islam instruct, or how does it...
How do you respond?
How do you respond? What does it tell you? How you should deal with somebody perhaps who is who's hostile and aggressive?
Well, there is one basic rule that the Quran provides for us in this. That is, it is quite possible to reduce the extent of enmity and antagonism not by replying to evil by evil, but by trying to win the heart of the person who committed that wrong. And many times it works like magic. Indeed, the Quran alludes to this. In one beautiful verse appearing in chapter 41, verse 34, it says, وَلَا تَسْتَوِي الْحَسَنَةُ وَلَا السَّيِّئَةُ اِدْفَعْ بِالَّتِي هِيَ أَحْسَنَ فَإِذَا الَّذِي بَيْنَكَ وَبَيْنَهُ عَدَاوَةٌ كَأَنَّهُ وَلِيٌّ حَمِيمٌ. It says, goodly word or response or goodness and evil cannot be equated. It says, by way of instruction, repel evil with what is better. In other words, don't repel evil with evil. Repel evil with kindness, whenever you can do that. And then it says, it may be that there is one between you and him, there is great enmity, turn out to be your most intimate friend. And that happens, I think, in the experience of many of the viewers. They must have gone through that stage. Somebody who might show aggression, antagonism, and undue unfairness to you, but through kindness, a person may, if he has any sensitivity, degree of sensitivity, may realize that maybe not as bad as he might have thought. He might start being ashamed of himself, of being too biased against you. So it works. It does work, and I know it happened in many situations I'm familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
The same meaning has been expressed by Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. He says that you cannot, لَن تَسَعَ النَّاسَ بِأَمْوَالِكُمْ, you cannot really embrace all people with your property or money. You may not have as much money to really be charitable to people to win them. But he says, you can embrace all of them with two things, with the cheerfulness of the face and the decency of conduct. This is one way of winning people, which works much better than just material kind of things to win their love or affection. However, I must say also that if it happens, like you said, that the nature of the discussion or argument is such that it is futile to reply or to discuss, it is better to avoid the situation altogether. There are directives in that. For example, in chapter 25 in the Quran, verse 63, describing the true servants of God. الَّذِينَ يَمْشُونَ عَلَى الْأَرْضِ هَوْنًا وَإِذَا خَطَبَهُمُ الْجَاهِلُونَ قَالُوا سَلَامًا, that they walk in humility on earth. And when the ignorant here is a rough translation, the original Arabic jahilun could mean ignorance, and could also mean people who cannot control their, aggression or emotions. When those people who are ignorant or arrogant attack them, they say, peace. The same has been confirmed in other verses in the Quran, for example, in chapter 28, that whenever those true believers listen or hear any vain or improper things, indecent things, they say, peace be with you, we are not seeking those who are ignorant. So even in a situation like that, it's better still to get out of it in a graceful way.
Now, should one infer from that it's better to accept humiliation, or perhaps not to have any response when confronted with hostility?
Well, not necessarily. Because, as you might recall, you see, all the various moral virtues in Islam, they connect with each other without conflict. And you might recall, in one of the programs we discussed also, dignity,
mm-hmm.
in addition to humility. Humility is a virtue, but dignity also is a moral virtue. Islam doesn't ask people to be humiliated, he asks them to have humility and humbleness. And these are not exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But many times, like you said, you might feel that a person is very angry or ignorant or arrogant, whatever the case may be. And if you really start responding for each word or each, you know, name calling, then indeed you're not accomplishing much, because you might be losing that dignity. In other words, it's more graceful not to engage in this type of exchange, because it will just increase mm-hmm. aggression on the other side. But a person also should try to assess the situation and see which is the best approach to deal with the situation in a more graceful way. Let me just give you one example of a very real situation faced by Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. He himself gave the example. A man asked permission to see him. And while he was waiting, he said a bad word about the Prophet. He said, "What a bad relative is he, or what an evil relative." Almost like cursing the Prophet. Now, when he entered to see the Prophet, even though the Prophet heard him, in fact, saying that, he met him with a cheerful face, and he talked to him kindly and softly. And then after he left, the wife of the Prophet, Aisha, told him, "Oh, Messenger of God, did you hear what this man said? He said such and such." He said, "Yes, but when did you, Aisha, know me as an obscene person? Did you ever see me committing any of these obscenity?" In other words, suppose he said that, do you expect me to respond to obscenity with obscenity? And in fact, what he really did was simply implementation in his own life, or application of what he preached. And what he preached, as we find, for example, in some saying of the Prophet, he said that a believer is not a person who injures others unduly, a person who curses others, or a person who is obscene in his way of talking to others. But I agree with you, there may be some situation where you feel that you have been attacked unfairly, that you have this human inclination to try and defend yourself, or, you know, say some word. This is not necessarily bad, so long as it's done also in a proper way and in a situation where it does not result in negative reaction or increasing the degree of enmity. In other words, it shouldn't just be a sort of revenge, but rather try your best to avoid getting into that exchange.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about a situation where you have an individual perhaps who's not hostile, but perhaps it might be more correct to describe them as being highly argumentative, somebody who keeps arguing for their opinion, you know, just for the sake of keeping an argument going. Mm-hmm. Should a Muslim engage in a discussion such as this?
Well, this kind of attitude is, or argument for the sake of argument, she called it, is called in Arabic lagh. That's the term that appears in the Quran, lagh. Now, or jadal, to be more accurate. Lagh means generally vain talk, but jadal means just arguing. However, the usage of the term in the Quran is used both for positive and negative. Jadal. For example, in the Quran, in chapter 16, addressing the Prophet, it says, وَجَادِلْهُمْ بِالَّتِي أَحْسَنْ. Argue or discuss with them in the most decent or the best manner. So, jadal, or argument or discussion, which has a good purpose behind it, where both sides are willing to accept the truth and they just open-minded and open-hearted, that's not forbidden. But the same term also is used to refer to what you're talking about, the argument for the sake of argument. People who are just closing their minds, they have, you know, no way of communication, they don't think even about what you say, just sticking to one position without opening their hearts and minds to discuss other things. In a case like that, this is not recommended for the Muslim. Indeed, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, as narrated in At-Tirmidhi, he says that there would be no people mm-hmm. who are misguided after they were already on guidance, except that they start this vain and senseless or futile type of argumentation. In At-Tabarani, he said something similar. He said, "I would be responsible or in charge of a house in the middle of paradise for those who leave vain arguments, even if they are right." So you could be right and you feel tempted that you want to correct errors, and, mm-hmm. but when it's not really productive, it might just better lead to leave it to avoid engaging in that.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, in the balance of today's program, I'd like to ask you a few questions related to another aspect of the topic we've been discussing, and that is the whole question of backbiting. Is there any mention of backbiting in the Quran?
There is mention of that because it's part also of the responsibility of the word, or God holding us responsible in the day of judgment for our actions, including also not only what we do, but what we say. Yes, it is mentioned, and actually the equivalent Arabic term for backbiting is ghaiba.
Mm-hmm.
And we find a derivative of that appearing in chapter 49, verse 12 in the Quran. وَلَا تَجَسَّسُوا وَلَا يَغْتَبْ بَعْضُكُمْ بَعْضًا. Addressing the believer, it says, don't spy on each other. And it says then, nor speak ill of each other behind their backs. And then it gives a terrible description or parable of people who speak against their brothers in their absence, speak ill of them. It says, does one of you or would any of you like to eat the flesh of his dead brother? So to talk in the absence of a person, ill of him, is just like eating the flesh of a dead person, which is of course a terrible picture that's giving of this common attitude, I should say, of backbiting other people in their absence. This applies even if what you're saying about the individual is true. In other words, you don't have to really, for example, lie or say something untrue about the person to be regarded as backbiting. Even if that negative thing that you describe about the individual is true, it is still false within backbite. This is not my own interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, was sitting with his companions, as narrated in Muslim, and he told them, do you know what is backbiting? They said, God and his messenger know best, that they wanted him to answer. He said, backbiting is to mention something about your brother which he hates. That he hates you, or he hates for you to say that about him or her. So some people asked him, he said, how about if the thing that you're talking about him or mentioning about him is true? You're not really lying, it's true. His answer was really exemplary. He said, if what you describe or talk about him, the ill that you talk about him is true, then you are committing backbiting. And if what you say about him is untrue, then not only you're doing backbiting, you're even lying. You're making a great deal of injustice and lie against that person. So in other words, both of them are wrong. This kind of restrictions and discouraging of backbiting is intended to prevent a number of social ills. This includes, for example, publicizing evil. In other words, for example, in the Quran, in chapter 24, verse 19, it says that God does not like the publication or spreading of evil news or evil things about other people. Of course, there is an exception of that that may come through, except when the person is oppressed and he has to explain his grievance. But on the whole, it's not a good idea to spread evil in society. Secondly, it is also based on the realization of the weakness of human beings. That as humans, we are weak. We may have some shortcomings and weaknesses, and nobody really is entirely free from several weaknesses, not only one, several weaknesses each one of us have. Now, if I know of a weakness of some person and start talking about it, you're putting him or her in a situation where it's very difficult to correct oneself. A position where the person may insist on the wrong. Whereas it might be much more graceful to realize that you are as weak as other people are and give them a chance, if they have some weakness, to try to correct that in a graceful way without putting them into public embarrassment whenever possible through personal and intimate courteous advice that could be given to them. Another point also that could be added here is that to prevent or to try to discourage backbiting in Islam as a moral virtue is related to resistance of some of the human weaknesses in trying to have certain motives. People who, when they backbite, they have certain motives. Either they do that because of their revenge, attitude of revenge against somebody that they didn't like or have dispute with, which is, again, is not a very laudable type of motive. They backbite other people because they want to please their friends, because they know those friends may not like that person. So they come to them and say, you know, such and such person did this and that, to make them laugh or feel happy, which is, again, a very mean type of objective. It could be even just the sheer idleness and curiosity just to keep talking about the weaknesses of other people. So these are all related to social ills, which could be reduced a great deal by avoiding backbiting.
Mm-hmm. I think we have time for one more question in today's program. I'd like to ask you whether or not there are any exceptions to this obligation not to speak about other people's deficiencies. For example, if you're making comments which are not necessarily destructive, are there any exemptions?
There are certain exemptions, but not arbitrary exemptions that every person, for example, whenever he likes, he says, you know, that's justified for me. It's one should use his conscience quite clearly to make sure whether a case may be really an exception of having to say something about somebody else's weakness. And Imam al-Nawawi, one of the great Muslim scholars who lived in the 13th century, gave a list of these, or example of these cases. One case is what I mentioned early, a person who's oppressed, where injustice has been done to someone. And the only way to ameliorate for this injustice or try to, you know, undo it, is to say that somebody was unjust to me, somebody did this and that to me. Of course, you'll be talking about weakness or fault of the other person, but many times you've got to say that. That's why the verse I quoted, for example, in the Quran, for example, in chapter 4, verse 148, لا يحب الله الجهر بالسوء من القول إلا من ظلم. God does not like evil to be publicized or to broadcast, to be noised abroad, except for those on whom injustice has been done. So this is an exception there because you have to. This might be particularly true not only on individual level, but on social and national or more universal level even. When there is a ruler, for example, who is dictatorial in his approach, who is oppressing people, murdering or torturing people, or expropriating properties or whatever other evils, you cannot say, no, don't backbite him, because this is something that has been done to hurt others, to commit injustice to them, and you've got to reveal those faults in order to correct it, not just by way of revenge. A second case, clear case also, is when it is necessary to fight evil and indecency to expose certain things. But again, that's the absolute minimum to fight evil. In order to change indecency, for example, you might say, all right, there are some organizations in society that are doing this or that, and that's harmful to society. You've got to stop it. So you have to talk about the evil things that are going on for the purpose, again, of correction. And even then, it's better to do it by advice first, on a private basis. But if it doesn't work, and you have to bring your case, you have to say that. A third case would be a person who's seeking a verdict in some religious matter. You go to some religious scholar, for example, and you want to find what is the rule of faith or Islam with respect to a particular problem. In which case, you might say, all right, somebody did that to me. Is that right or wrong? What should I do? So it might be necessary to give this kind of information. And it's better actually to use, instead of names of people, say, how about if somebody did that to me? Another case would be legitimate advice without the attitude of just talking about other people in. Somebody asking for advice before he gives his daughter in marriage, before having business partnership. These are some of the cases where there are legitimate good reasons, good intention, and the minimum of use of negative things.
I see the crew are giving us the sign that it's time to wrap up. So
wait a second.
Brother, we want to thank you for being our guest today and watching our program, and invite you back next week when we have our final program in our series on the moral teachings of Islam. Thank you for watching. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you.
Thank you.